But let's continue our discussion about Din Mamon and Din Isur. One of the things that I found that I thought was very interesting, and I'll give it to you in a photocopy, is a piece of the Mishmeres Chaim about Pidgin HaBet. I'll give you a little bit of the background. Pidgin HaBet obviously is a mitzvah, but at the same time, it's a mitzvah that you fulfill with your money, and you pay the Kohen 5 shlomim. Could be that in certain cases, the Kohen even has his chus tvir, he could demand that money. We'll see about that later. That's going to be the Achiezer about Makire Kahuna and stuff like that. So the basic question is as follows. We don't really know who the father is in any particular occasion. This is way before DNA testing. So we base ourselves on a rov, which is called rov be'ilo sachar ba'al. And we assume that if a husband and wife are living together, the child is the child of this father. But we have a principle in dini mamonos that ein holch b'mamon achar harov, that rov is not strong enough to be motzi mamon. So the question is, there's something fundamentally awry in the whole mitzvah, the whole essence, the whole nature of the mitzvah of Pidgin HaBet, because the whole mitzvah is based on the fact that this is my son, and that's why I have to be poed to him and pay this 5 shlomim to the Kohen, when the presumption that it's my son, that he is my son, is based on rov. How does the Kohen have rights to collect and force me to pay based on rov if ein holchim b'mamon achar rov? Not everybody agrees that ein holchim b'mamon achar rov, but we pass on like Rav in that case, and ein holchim that ein holchim achar rov. So what I found fascinating is that Rav Scheinberg attacks this question from many different dimensions, one of which I think is most relevant to us, and you can begin to already formulate your ideas and guess where we're going with this. But before we get to that, he wants to suggest the following amongst, again, many, many different answers. And this he bases on a Shar HaMelech, that's a super commentary in the Rambam. And he says that there are certain roves that are begeda ruba de ruba. It's like 99%, very high, high percentage.
Incorrectly phrased, of course.
Majority of the majority, right. And one of the examples he gives is the following. The Torah says that Make Aviv is Chayav Misa. How do you know he's your father? Ella, what, you're going to tell me, Rov Bila Sakhar Baal. But that's a little bit strange to put someone to death based on a Rov. So that's where the Shar HaMelech came up with this breakthrough that there are two categories of Rov. There's something called a rove, and there's something called a ruba de ruba. I'm going to take a shot at trying to explain it with the Anius Daiti. Again, it probably pays to go through the Shar HaMelech. He doesn't even tell you where it is. But I would suggest the following. Every rove has a miut. And the Halacha v'Achirav Lahatos gives us license to be machria the Sofek based on the rove, meaning hachros ha-Sofek. We still really have a doubt. No one could be absolutely certain that it didn't come from the miut. In fact, Rabbi Meir, we don't pass Gerker Meir, holds chayshina l'miuta. Again, you have to know exactly when, and when rove operates according to Rabbi Meir. So I would suggest that there are two types of rove. There's a rove that lends itself to hachra, and the Torah gives us license to be machria the suffix, but the suffix remains outstanding. And then there's something called a rove without a suffix at all. That the rove is so powerful that it prevents even the latest ha-suffix. And if there's no latest ha-suffix, I don't even have to go through the process of being machria the suffix. So perhaps what the Shar HaMelech is saying is that certain roves come under the category of ruba de ruba, meaning it's such a high percentage that the Torah is not saying, well, you know what, let's be machri and tip the scale in favor of the rove. The Torah might be just saying, forget about the miut. Just discount the miut as if it didn't exist. Obviously, we'd have to figure out in what cases we apply what. So one of the principles that he wants to say is based on a Gemara in Chulin. Again, he doesn't quote the Gemara. But the Gemara asks the following question. The Torah says that you put a murderer to death. And the Gemara raises the following question, Dilba Mokum Nekev, Bemokum Saif, Nekev Havi, maybe he was a treifa and he was going to die anyway. The victim of the crime who was murdered may have died anyway. So the Gemara says that rove people ain't no treifas. So the Shar HaMelech is not so happy with that apparently. Okay, rove people are not treifas, but there's still a mute. You're going to put a person to death based on a rove. That's going pretty far. And not only that, the Gemara says that there's a difference between what's called a Ruba the Issa Kaman and a Ruba the Lesser Kaman. So when we take a vote in Bezdin and we decide whether to put someone to death and we condemn him to death based on a Rov, there what the Torah is saying is count the Rov. That's called a Ruba the Issa Kaman. But then you have Rovs that are based on psychology and biology and so forth and so on. That really is a less powerful Rov than a Ruba the Issa Kaman. In fact, Tosis in one place, I think at the beginning of Shoshan Nogach, if I'm not mistaken, he assumes that Rov Dayanim means that the Dayanim who are dissenting are bottled to the Rov. It's almost like it was a unanimous opinion. That's how the Halacha views it. But that's only...
They have to sign.
Yeah, but that's only on what kind of a Rov? That's only on Ruba the Issa Kaman. But when you talk about Ruba the Lesser Kaman, you know, most women give birth after 9 months and not 7 months. I mean, that really lends itself to all sorts of sphakas. So how can it be that we put a person to death assuming that the victim of the crime was not a treifa? And the answer is that ruba de ruba of people are not treifas. It's not a 10% chance that a person is a treifa, but if a person is walking on 2 feet and to the best of our knowledge he's healthy, that's the way the Torah assumes. And therefore, in the case of a father and a son, and if the son hits the father, he's chayav of misa for that if he wounds him. And if the father has a bechor, he has to pay the pigeon aben of chamish shlaim, and we don't apply the principle of ein holchem on mecharov. That's ruba de ruba. So again, just throwing out one of his many, many possible approaches.
Mike Balabatish's solution. Mike Balabatish's solution is since they didn't have DNA and didn't have fancy statistics. If the Torah says, if somebody hits his father, he's put to death, the Torah obviously implies that. And did all four being
so Sam, we're coming to that soon. That's going to be another approach.
But
I have a problem with that. I'll tell you. He's very excited about that approach of Schomburg. I personally have a problem. Any event, he has another approach, which I thought was very fascinating. That really touches on what we're doing today. And this he says in the name of the Kudshus HaSpekis, which is, I think, the brother of the Ketzos HaChoshet, if I remember correctly. And he says the following, that Zed is Sofek Matnas Kuna's Lina Basruba Lo Koshami. The fact that in Matnas Kuna there's no din of Ein Holchem Amen Charov, that's not a question at all. Why? He says because with regard to Pidgin Aben has two dimensions to it. It's a mitzvah, and it's mom. And he suggests that even if Bitaris Dini Momenos, you would say Ein Holchem Momenach Rov, but nevertheless, with regard to mitzvah, Rov is enough to be Machayev, meaning mitzvah has the same status as Isur Veheter. And the Torah says you have to be Machmer in a case of Sofik, and certainly if you have a Rov. He says, Havi Navi Sofik Bisurim. And he gives two cases. One is the case of Pidgin Aben, and the other case is Maka Oviv. And he wants to suggest that since in Isurim we could rely on a Rov, therefore that's enough to be Machayev you in the mitzvah. Now, once you have the mitzvah, Mimela you have a Chiv Mamon in order to fulfill that mitzvah. But Enichinami, if we only isolated the Chiv Mamon per se, as a separate Chiv Mamon, independent of any mitzvah, then we would apply the principle of Ein Holchem Mamon Achar Rov.
You said it's a parallel to Maka Aviv.
And also with Maka Aviv, again, since he has to treat his father as his father.
Since there's an
Isser. And there's an Isser involved. Therefore, the Torah is Machmer, and based on Rove, we're going to assume that his father is his father.
That's
going a little bit further. Right. But anyway, what I wanted to point out to you is that Lechora, the whole thing is Mirab Sinigra. How could you say such a thing? I mean, after all, in Mamet also there's an Isser Gzela. So why not say that? What do you mean Ein Holchem Mamon Acharov? Maybe I owe him money. So you can tell me, well, I don't have to pay him because I have a rov that supports my opinion. But what about Sofek Gezel? And I think what he's implying here is that Gezel and Lo Sigzel,
yeah, that supports your opinion.
Right. A beard, I might have a chazaka, whatever the case may be. But the point is that I think he's building himself on what Reb Chaim said. Again, he doesn't make reference to Reb Chaim. That Lo Sigzel is a separate Easter. It's in a category of its own. And it's really determined and governed by the laws that rule in Dine Mamonos. Then he wants to say another approach. He wants to say that there are two issues here, and the first issue is whether or not we assume he's your father, whether or not we assume he's your son. And the Torah gives us guidelines that control that issue. Once that issue is determined, memela, it impacts on dini mamonos. But he himself rejects that approach because he says, no, whenever you have a double suffix, he has a tosis to prove that we use different rules that govern different sfeikas. So as far as the suffix, whether he's your father or not, whether he's your son or not, we may have one set of rules, but those don't determine mamonos. And therefore you can't grant the Kohen rights to force. Now he says, Sam Yosfa. Ulam ha'iker nir b'yenai. He says, after all these svaras, he says, Shiny Hocha, this is different. Shezel etzem achiv Torah. The al ha'av shall pirov hu av, uregilim lekroso av, al av kazeh, chiva Torah b'pijin ha'ben. And then I can add here, maka av. So I'll tell you what I have here. I have a problem with this. And tell me if you disagree with me, and that's fine. What do you mean the Torah was machayev me in paying this five shloim because he's the av that the Torah recognizes as the av? Adarabah. Mimakom shebasa. If that's your yesod, if that's how you interpret the parasha, then this should be a binyan av. This should prove that holchem a moment achar rov. Meaning, if you want to say the answer, well, this is different because it's governed by the laws of mitzvah and isurim, and if I cannot derive any conclusions as far as dini mamonos, nicha, I'd be very happy with that. But he doesn't want to go with that approach, Rav Scheinberg. He wants to insist, that this is the regular classical combination of dini isur v'hetu and dini mamon. But here the Torah says you have to pay five son for your ben. Who's your ben? The ben of the av. And who's the av? The av that we call a father based on the rov. But I'm saying if that's the way the Torah organized and formulated the chi of mamon of pidgin av ben, why shouldn't that become a binyan av? Typically, why shouldn't this be yalfusa for kol Torah kula that holchem a mamon achar rov? The answer has to be that this is the exception to the rule. No, if this is the exception to rather than the rule, then we're back to all the other answers that he gave before. Anyway, I found this very fascinating. I want to give this over to you.
Especially for Tzvaikas, it's a much more powerful argument, you know? Once you assume that you...
Let me just show you which it is. It should be this piece. Here. Okay. It's a short piece. Very...
You just want hours?
And that's the godless of this book, Mishmeres HaKam.
Just want the first section.
Just the first one. That's what I have for now.
Or you want to just do it for later?
Later on. No, I'm just leaving it on the table so that you can have access to it. Now, Rabosai, there's a contemporary Rosh Hashiva that I happen to know personally. His name is Rav Moshe Rosmarin. I don't know if you ever heard of him. And he's written a bunch of svarim called the Dvar Moshe. And in his Hakdama to Masechta Bava Kama, he has what I call a Lomdusha Mechkar. You know, it's he's investigating. And he says that muskam, dover muskam hu, everybody would agree that if a person is holding on to a mazik and he's careless about that mazik, and as a result somebody suffers damages, that he violates an isur klapishmaya. That's his language. And he wants to know, what is that isur? Now first of all, to prove that he violates an isur, he quotes Reb Chaim. And he says you'll find this in Reb Chaim al Ashas, which is what we call stencil, the Bava Kama Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis. So I didn't get a chance to look that up. And where does Reb Chaim build himself? On what does he build his conclusion? So the Gemara says that if you don't watch your shor properly, and somebody never gets killed as a result, then you have to pay what's called kofar. And the Gemara says kufra kapara. So sugya Bava Kama, sugya Makis, kufra kapara. So Reb Chaim used to say the very fact that you need a kapara, that itself proves that you're not just dealing with issues of mamon, of paying damages, as we call tort law, but you're also dealing with averos. Otherwise, why do you need a kapara? But what is the nature of the avera? So in this investigation, he raises a number of possibilities. First of all, this is fascinating. He quotes Rabbeinu Yonah in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, of all places. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that Mazik violates the law of Lotigzol. And Rav Rosmarin takes this very seriously. I would say that that's not what Rabbeinu Yonah really means. Because how can you say that a mazik is violating lo sigzol? Lo sigzol means when I take your mamon and halokeach mamon chaveru machniso l'shuso. That's not the case of mazik. But that's his first possibility. His second possibility is lo tosin domin beveisech. And he has a third possibility which is very similar. Ushmarta miyod means nafshasech val tamid al dam reyach.
These are problems. Is the hypothesis here that there's no isser of mazik? Is that the no hypothesis?
No, he doesn't even raise that possibility.
I'm just asking the way you're thinking, but saying he needs kapara versus what?
He doesn't have another possibility.
But logically. I can be mazik anybody who wants to
respect. Yeah, I'll pay him up. It doesn't.
So again, Zayla, I'm not allowed to.
Correct. So if you're like Rabbi Yonah, then if I was mazik you, then I violate these Zaylas, so it's also Vitor's Zayla. Okay. Which reminds me, Sam. Oh, no, of course I had that article for you to read for me. Okay. I know I put it in my briefcase, but of course, now I can't find it. Okay. Fine. Now, in terms of Lotamet al Dam Riecha and Lotosim Dom Vesecha and Nishmaya Tabot and Shas, all that stuff, you know what? That could be true for a Shar, if it could be a killer Shar, but I don't know if that law would apply straight across the board to all Mazikim. I'm not sure that every Mazik is Lotosim Dom Vesecha. Then he goes on and he has another possibility. This I found very, very fascinating. He says that the Torah says v'hashev teshivim with regard to an aveda, and he says the following: kal v'chomer, if I have to return a lost object of yours, then how much more so am I not allowed to destroy an object of yours? If I have to be so careful about your possessions that I have to return them to you if lost, how much more so do I have to return? Do I have to be careful not to actually cause the damage or the loss of your possession? Now again, there's a problem here as well, if any is daiti, because I don't know if you could derive a lav from a kal v'chomer of an essay. Although Hoshev Teshivim has not only an essay, but it also has a lotas, right? L'sucha l'salim that we discussed at great length. But nevertheless, you know, it could be the Torah created this halama, l'sucha l'salim, as a separate avera in order to strengthen that mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Fine. Ain't on Shimon Adin, but that's not a problem because, you know, you have to pay. You know, you have to pay compensation and for damages. That's not an issue. But this I thought was very, very interesting. This kal v'chomer. Then he quotes Rav Baruch Ber, and Rav Baruch Ber quotes Rav Chaim, as we can assume. So this he writes is in Baba Kama Simon Beis. Maybe we'll get a chance to look at this. I don't think that was on our list, but we'll add that to our list. And The Torah says, "V'lo yishmerenu." And then the Torah goes on to say in Parshas Mishpat that if you don't watch your mazik carefully and it goes out and damages, then you have to pay damage. Shalim yishalim. So therefore, the Mishnah says, "Kol shmirasan olecha." Any time that you have a mazik in your possession, it's shmirasan olecha. You're responsible to watch it. So Rav Chaim wanted to apply a principle of kol mokum shenema lav or pen, etc., etc., or shmar is always a lav. So Rav Chaim says the following, that there are two dimensions to v'lo yishmerenu. One v'lo yishmerenu is, if I could use the term, an ethical responsibility, that you violated your ethical responsibility to watch and guard a mazik. And number two, v'lo yishmerenu, shalim to shalim as a din mamon. Meaning that there are two dimensions to the halacha of mazik. One is mazik b'toras isur, whatever that isur is, v'lo yishmerenu according to Rav Chaim. And number two, mazik b'toras chiyuv mamon.
I have a linguistic problem. The lav of shomer means the shomer lacha, don't do this and do that. Here's v'lo yishmerenu, he's not going to watch the shomer. That's an isur?
The isur is because he violated lo yishmerenu. You
know? No.
It should say lo yishmerenu. That's your point, linguistically. No,
it's not the shomer thing that's doing it, right? It's the lo? Not the Shomer, because Shomer pertains to a person. Shomer,
you know what, Sam, I'm going to ask you the following. If you could open up, maybe you'll find it. I didn't get a chance to do this.
Semen Beis?
Semen Beis and Mokam. I forget which volume.
We copied it.
Oh, you did copy. Oh, I didn't remember that was out on our list.
I'm pretty sure we did.
Okay, so let's see if he tells you. Maybe he'll tell you a little bit more.
That one.
Okay,
so let's see if we can find this in the name of Reb Chaim.
That would be like a joke if they take the Shomer and the Shor and make it a diss on the person, right? It means literally means what your Shomer usually is used.
So I think yourself.
Not watch the show, that's not necessary.
I think this is the line that we want to look at. Again, it may come before that. You know, whenever you see this word,
page base, yeah, we got page base.
Right. So he says, the Beniske moment never a parsha de lo yishmarena, gam le'inyan onish bidei shamayim. So you're right.
He's not using the word. He's not using the word.
Lo yishmeren.
Because it's like you didn't watch him. So in class, oh, you should have.
Yeah, maybe it's just like that. I thought it was from the word lo, but I don't know how you.
Lo, yeah.
It should be lo yishmeren.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever it is. Yeah. And then he says, al yidei din shmiros and alecha nasa gam mazik leinyan
sheikoshi
the rush
of
yidei.
So the implication is you should have, right?
But see when you kofar. Oh, here Taka quotes the alecha of kofar. Now, if we fly backwards, maybe towards the beginning of this essay, I'm just going to guess, if you don't mind, this is going to be a little bit of a game for me. You know, I honestly didn't see this, so I'd like to try to guess what he's going to say, or what I would have said at least. The Gemara tells us in Baba Kama that Hamadlik Gidisho Shel Chaver B'Shabbos is Potter, Mipnei Shem Eschayev Ben Nafsha. The Mishnah, I think, in the sixth parak. That means kinle the rabbi. Now, that's not such a simple thing. This Mishnah is a radical chiddush. Why? Because I understand that he's chayav misa for burning on Shabbos, but I'm not sure that the chiv misa would knock off his tort responsibility to pay damages. The Meiri is very famous for saying, in the name of the Chachmei Provence, it's one of those bombastic Meiris that everybody quotes, that the halach of kinleib the rabbi means we cannot impose two onshim, two punishments for two crimes that were committed simultaneously with one action. That's kinleib the rabbi. But if on the other hand I damage you and I have to pay you back for damages and that has nothing to do with onshim, it's a chiv mom, then there's no kinleib the rabbi meaning. And it would seem, therefore, for this Mishnah, and again, I'm wondering if that's what Rav Ber is going to quote, that the halacha of Tashlumei Nezikin is a result of the Avera. Notice, the Torah says the following. Don't do this. Don't damage Yanim's property. And if you do so, you're going to pay damages for that. So the payment of the damages is the flip side of the coin of violating the Issur Mazik, whatever that Issur Mazik is, and we had many, many possibilities, let's call it Lo Yishmerenu. Is doch memela, if now the chiv mamon results from the fact that you violated an avera, then we can define it and classify it as an onesh. And since you're getting a greater onesh of chil Shabbos and yechai misa, therefore kim lebe the rabbi. So let's just see if by chance in a million I was on the right track. Let's see what he says.
Before he started, he just said, look, it's impossible that you have to pay for mazik if there's no issur.
Oh.
It's impossible. That's his halva for halva you pay.
So that fits in very well with what we're saying.
Money, you also pay money.
Right. Now, let's say a person would borrow money while he's being machal Shabbos. He would definitely have to pay. according to the Chachmim Fervantz, because the Chachmim Fervantz says, what is paying back his money? What does that have to do with the Chivonshim for Shabbos, for Chil Shabbos? There's no connection. When the Torah says you should be getting two onshim, the Torah says we'll let you off with the more severe onsh, but not if I take your money, I have to give it back to you. I'm holding on to your money. So how does Nezikin work that I'm potter, you can't be tover me for your goddish, your haystack that went up in smoke, just because I'm chayiv, you know, for Chil Shabbos? So I think the answer must be that, and I think that's probably what Rav Rosenzweig had in mind, that the machayev of Tashlumin Ezekiel is the Averis Iser Mazik.
Yeah.
Whatever that Avera might be, I don't know if Rav Rosenzweig pinpointed.
And in that mission there was no Avera of Mazik?
What did he say?
In that mission there's no Avera of Mazik when he did
that. That's what I'm saying. That's why he's potter for paying for the Godish, because since the payment for the Godish is because of Averis Mazik, so the Torah applies the principle, Kim Leib the Rabbinah, since he's chayev a greater onesh for violating Shabbos, therefore we alleviate him from the lower onesh, namely the onesh of paying of compensation.
That's
in other words, it's not, and again, I think it's the opposite of Rabbeinu Yonah. Because what's Rabbeinu Yonah saying? That if I damage you, I'm holding on to your moment. So I don't think Kimble the Rabbeinu would apply to that. But if we're saying no, that the reason why I pay damage is because v'lo yishmereno, I violated this ethical principle and I deserve a punishment for it, okay, I'm getting a worse punishment, and that's Kimble the Rabbeinu. Are you following me, Achille?
I'm following you.
You look like you're.
I'm trying to think whether it's consistent with Chachmei Provence.
That's why the Mishnah says that he's potter. Why is he potter for the Godish? So the Mishnah says because Shekein Mischayev Benafsha. So I'll affect the kasha, but according to Chachmei Provence, if I borrow money from you, he has a whole sugya with Esnan Zona, I'm not going to go into that. So I can't say, well, I'm getting a higher punishment, I'm not going to return the money that I borrowed from you. That's not Kim Levin around me. That's a chiyuv
mamash.
So why not apply the same thing in the case of Madlik Kedisha Shel Chavero? The answer must be because Madlik Kedisha Shel Chavero is not that I'm holding on to your mamon. I'm not holding on to your mamon. Did I walk away with your goddish? Your goddess is up in smoke. And what the Torah says, I violated Isur Mazik, and for that I have to I'm going to be punished. I'm going to pay you damages, like Pepsi versus what was it called? The famous case, you know, that reached the Supreme Court. You remember when the Pepsi Cola bottle went up? It was a faulty bottle. This is the 1950s, I think. So it went up and it broke in 50 different directions. You know, so I have to pay you damages, not the Torah Schiyuv Mammon, but the Torah Schiyuv Avera, chiyuv for violating an isur.
Kim Leib d'Rabbeinu b'Gzeila, what would you say?
So again, in that case, I would say then if he's holding on to someone else's mammon, he has to return it according to the
chachamim. No, but look, I have to return it. So that's a chiyuv. Right?
That's a chiyuv mammon.
It's a chiyuv mammon.
Because I'm holding on to his mammon, but that doesn't apply in the case of mazik.
But why is it only Mazik? He was over in Avera, he violated Isser. He violated Shabbos at the same time he stole someone's money.
Correct. So now we have two punishments. So let's give one punishment for violating Shabbos. Let's give another punishment for destroying someone's goddish. Is that your case, or he stole?
No,
he stole. So again, let's give another punishment for. Oh, so that's what I'm saying, that this has nothing to do with the punishment. The halacha of Hashavas HaGzela, again, we're getting into Reb Chaim here, but in addition to being a punishment, if you want to say that, it's also at the same time a chiyuv mamon. That's what we call mamona delay gabech. His mammon is in your possession. You can't walk around with someone's mammon and say, well, I don't have to be punished. That's nothing to do with punishment. It's his mammon. You got to return his mammon.
But might there be a line?
No, nobody's following.
Just splitting of hairs, why would I...
I don't see it as splitting of hairs.
I take someone's product from his field, I stole it, or I burnt his product in his field. Either way, I took it from him. You're saying in one case I do have a chiyuv to return it, in the other case I don't. This can later on.
Right. Wait a minute. You skipped a step here, you feel. In the other case, I don't have a chiyuv to return it. Forget about Kim Levin Rabbeinu. Forget about Shabbos. It wasn't Shabbos. If I, Chas V'Shalom, burnt out your haystack, it's not pshat that I have to return your haystack. Your haystack is gone. I can't return it. I have a chiyuv tashlume mamon.
Okay.
So now we have to define what's the nature of a chiyuv tashlumei mamon. If you want to say the tashlumei mamon is just to replace your haystack I got to replace your haystack. But if you're saying that tashlumei mamon is a punishment for the crime of damaging and destroying someone's haystack, now I can apply kimle b'derabinei, and I can say that tashlumei mamon is only engendered if and when an onesh can be imposed upon the criminal act. If the criminal is somehow exonerated from, you see, this would be an amazing nafkamina. What would be if the person who burnt down his friend's haystack was a shote? So I don't know if a shote is chayiv in the zikin. Correct? He's parted from all onshin shematot. Right, Yosan Ra. Excellent. Yeah,
here's where I'm having a difficulty. So I stole someone's object. Right? Chayiv to return. And before I return it, I destroy it. Now I don't have it anymore. So now it's a chayiv mamon.
So now you have to know.
To get off the hook from having to pay you back, I'll just destroy it.
So this is a machlokas rishonim, whether or not Damim, in a case where he destroyed the object, is a cube of the mitzvah of Heshiva Sagzela Shargoza. My nafkamina. Nafkamina, whether we can give Malkus for Gzela. Usually we don't give a person Malkus for Gzela because it's a not lav hanitak liyese. Hashif Tishime. Here, I don't have the object to return to you. It's already up in smoke. But the Torah says I have to pay Damim. What's the nature of that Tashlume Damim? Is it to replace the object, and then it's a cube of mitzvahs hashavas aveda, not in the same form. I can't give you back your haystack, but I can give you the $5,000 to buy and replace your haystack. Or do we say no? The mitzvah of a haystack, like zelish or gozel, is gone. It's up in smoke. You can never return the object. It doesn't exist. The Torah imposed upon the gazan a chiv mon to pay for damages.
This parallels what we learned about Shlom HaKan, about the issue of destroying the mother.
Correct. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish about bitlo, which I don't want to get into now because we'll get off on a tangent. Anyway, let's just see what Rabbi Baruch Baer does with this. I see. I know where he's going with this. Okay, stop. In the first paragraph, at least, he's going in a different direction entirely. What happens in a case of Safek Mazik? Because the Gemara at the beginning of Bava Kamma vacillates back and forth about Keren Tlusha, right? Keren, which is the horns, is Mechuberis. But the Gemara wants to know what would be if the Shar would take something in its mouth or whatever and destroy something. Would that come under Keren? And therefore you could sue the owner of the Shar. Is Tlusha the same as Mechuberis or not? Not relevant to us today. What's relevant to us today is that the Gemara doesn't come to any final conclusion. Comes along, if I'm not mistaken, the Rush. I'm trying to remember which one of the Rishonim. And he says that in... Oh, the Rashba. The Rashba. Look, I just saw it. As I was saying it, I saw it. You see, I'm remembering Girsa the Ankasa. I haven't learned Bava Kamma in ages. I mean, that part of Bava Kamma. So the Rashba says that in this case, he pays damages. So everybody asks the question, how can the Rashba says he pays damages if it's a Sofek, is Hamotu Bechaver all over Raya? Forget about Rov. I don't even need to enter into the question of Rov. You want to sue me for damages. You prove that Keren Tlusha, that Keren Tlusha has the same status as Keren Mechuberes. And you can never prove it. So they want to say that the Rashba holds that this is not judged as Sofek Mamon, but rather a Sofek Isur. Meaning the nature of the payment of damages is a penalty. It's a punishment. It's not replacing or giving you what is yours in terms of possession law and monetary transactions. And therefore, if I apply the principle of Sofek Lechumra, then I assume that even in the case of Tlusha, he violated the Iser of Mazik, whatever that Iser is, and therefore he pays damages. So the payment of damages of Nezikin is not to be guided or governed by the laws that govern Dini Mamonis, with Hamotzi Mechabel Varaya, but rather by the laws that govern Dini Isurim, and therefore we apply the principle of Sofik Iser Lahachma. Oh. Okay, I'm just reading the first line to test myself here and see if I can remember Bava Kamma. There's a Gemara at the beginning of HaKodesh called Chayev Bedine, that Potter Bedine Adam, the Chayev Bedin Shamay, otherwise known as Grover Ben Ezekiel. Oh, so it could be the following, that, let's see if I can guess what he's going to say, that as far as Mazik is concerned, B'toras Isur, it doesn't matter one iota whether it was direct mazik or indirect mazik. Grama is no less a violation of the Isur mazik than yashir, than a direct mazik. Oh. However, the only difference is that in a case of direct mazik, in addition to violating the Isur, which would apply again, that's common even to Grama, there's another halacha of a schus mamon, that the Nizak has a right to sue the Mazik for damages, b'toras mamon, like what we discussed about yesterday about Kerem Reacha, that the Poel who's working in somebody else's field has a schus mamon to eat from that field. Here too, the Nizak has a right to be tovea based on his schus mamon, compensation from the mazik. But that's conditional on direct mazik. As far as Klapi Shmaya, the Isur mazik, is concerned, there's no difference between direct and grama. Because at the end of the day, you can artificially but deliberately set up a chain reaction until somebody loses whatever he loses. He's damaged whatever he's damaged. So as far as the Isur Mazik is concerned, the concern about somebody else's possessions, even Grama is Bechlal. The only problem is that if it's Grama, then Bitar Din Mazik, as a Maman Halacha, the Nizak has no rights to force you, to compel you to sue you for damages. Oh, so the Gemara says that he's Chayv Bidin Shamayim, meaning that since he violated the Isur Mazik, even in the case of Grama, then if he wants to compensate from a religious perspective as an atonement for his crime, as a kapara for his own, for his avera, then he pays. But that's not something that the Nizak could demand. So the Nizak will not be able to force the Mazik to pay in the case of Grama.
You're not saying there's a monetary obligation, but that it's not enforceable. You're saying it's just
So you're right. That's another shita. I wasn't going on that. I'm not sure if that shita. That shita might be the Ketzos HaChoshen, or maybe based on the Meiri. That really, I could sue you for damages in a case of Grama, but I can't force you to pay. Bezin's hands are tied. They can't force you to pay. But that's not the way I'm saying. Tfisa, exactly. That's the Ketzos. The Ketzos says that he tofas lo mafkina mine. So let me just see what he wants. Okay, that's the key word here. Vigaram lehafsid es hanizok, veliftar es hamavid. Veshamati mishmei, I guess he didn't hear it directly, dahagon hagodol Rav Shmuel Landau. I'm just going to guess here that maybe Rav Shmuel Landau is a grandson of the Noda Behud. I don't know that so. Shehiksha, Kalamalo Pirush Rashi Rabusa Gdola Misu, Dafilu Im Hevir Hamavir Biatzmo Aso Talmud Gamkein. Nilufi and Snaithir Rashi. All right. So he goes off a little bit on a tangent over here. But let's just see if at some point he differentiates between a chiyuv mamon and a chiyuv isur, a chiyuv onesh. Oh, let's look at, maybe this will be relevant to us. Towards the bottom of this paragraph that starts v'nira, about 8 lines up, he says, Batzi dvarai lifnei mori v'rabi omar shehu omer didin delo yishmena havi isura bira dvarim. That's what we started with. Ritzichas shor means if his shor kills somebody. So he gets a punishment for not watching his shor, and that's for being a rasha and causing the death of somebody. Hokinami din v'lo yishmerenu din ezikin gamke nemar le'inyan onesh bidei shamayim. Harekid varenu digam halo yishmerenu gamke nemar le'inyan onesh bidei shamayim. Okay, after potter atomun, nikomakom asur v'nenesh bidin shamayim. Again, I'm not sure if what he's saying is what I said, but I think what he would say here is that grama is a violation of the Isur Mazik, and therefore he's chayv b'din shamayim. Wow. Very fascinating. Oh, the next piece is gewaldig. But the next paragraph, Yechiel, I want you to see. This is fascinating. There's a separate din that Shane Veregel is potter b'shus harav. And let me throw out the following terminology here. And I'm not sure if I'm right, but it's exeus akosif. Meaning, logically, there's no reason why Shane Veregel should be potter b'shus harav. All other mazikin are chayv b'shus harav. There's that separate halach in the Shane mazik of Shane and the Shane mazik of Veregel. So he wants to know now, Yesh Lachkar, Ha'im Nomer Diyesh Iser V'Onish B'Dei Shamayim Al Kach. Meaning he's no less culpable or liable towards Shamayim because it was in Rishus Arabim. On the contrary, he should be tarred and feathered for running around with a shor in Rishus Arabim that's trampling on Yedim's, you know, tomatoes, or eating his tomatoes, you know, out of a basket. Okay, it's not out of the ground because it's in Rishus Arabim. And therefore, B'din Shamayim, he should certainly be Chayav, which would be, that would have mind-boggling implications here, which would mean that he really has to pay for these damages if he wants to achieve Kapara for his Isur. And I would go even further. If this Chakir is correct, then maybe he remains a Rasha in this case if he doesn't pay. I don't know, that could have tremendous implications in Allah. Or as you mentioned, the name of the Ketos, that maybe he could tough his Lom Afkinan if the Nizak grabs on. I don't know, I'm not sure.
Concept of Chiyah B'dei Shamayim, you're relegating to Isur, not to Mammon.
Right.
It's not...
No, there's cases where, strictly speaking, in the monetary, you know, law, in Choshe Mishpat, he, the Nizak, has no rights to claim compensation.
So what
you still
means in terms of Isurim. There is no...
Right, you still might have violated the Isurim.
I mean, okay, I was naive. That lots of the Shemayim can also mean it's not enforceable, but I owe you the money. More tzitz-like.
Right.
Not more Isurim-like, but
So what does this mean here when the Torah... But listen to this, Sam. He's saying, again, I'm not holding in the sugis, but to me this sounds revolutionary, that when the Torah says that Shein Veregel, it says, Ubir b'steyacher v'lo b'shus hegde, v'lo b'shus harabim, he's saying that's a separate p'tur as far as, to use your terminology, the ability of Beis Din to force the guy to cough up the money. But really he's chai of the money. Or the way I'm saying it, he's not chai of the money in Dini Mominus, but he's chai of to pay if he wants to achieve kapar for, you know, as a replacement for the onus for the violation of the Aveira of causing someone a damage. Because
almost like paying kofar.
Correct, like kofar. He's no less guilty as far as the criminal action of causing hesed than in the case of Rishus HaYachid, you know, Rishus HaNizak, where I take my shor into your backyard and it eats up your tomatoes. So that to me sounds pretty radical. But basically, I think we could summarize for our purposes that this whole simon is all about the interface or the overlap between the two dimensions of mazik. One mazik b'toras isur and one din mazik b'toras mamon. And his nafgiminas are legabi sofek, that maybe I would have to pay you in sofek because I treat it as a sofek isur. My nafgimina was whether you say kimle the rabbinay, and now he has another nafgimina or two. One in terms of grubba bin azikin, that maybe grubba bin azikin still is in violation of the avera, even though it's not He's not forced to compensate him in dini momentus. And finally, the nafkimina of the p'tur of shein v'regel b'shus harab. There may be a velt in here in this sima. So I'm very excited that we did this because it was not on my original agenda. Now I want to share with you an interesting insight in Reb Chaim Ozer. Now, Reb Chaim Ozer was not, as far as I know, a Talmud of Reb Chaim Brisker. He was a contemporary Reb Chaim. And yet he seems to be operating, at least in this case, with Reb Chaim's terminology and his fundamental distinction. Because, I'm always interested... Do you need to photocopy?
No, I just don't have the page number on it. He's taking a picture of my photocopy.
Okay.
I have the photocopy.
Okay, great. So, Rabosa, I always have an interest in the history of chakiris. When did these chakiris really start?
What's the page number? I'll write it down.
Again, it's one of those Hebrew-English. So, on the English side, it's 124. And on the Hebrew side, it's Samach Gimel. This apparently was popular back in the day. I think in the modern Svarim, I don't think they do this. No. It's a little bit from an old-fashioned kind of... Anyway. So here in Shut Achiezer Chelek Gimel, Simon Samach Gimel, he speaks about the sugya of Shlichus, specifically with regard to Truma. The Gemara says that if somebody went ahead and was mafish my truma, and when I got down to the sodden, I saw what he did, so I made a statement, klach l'chaitza yofos, which can be understood in one of two opposite directions. Either he was being very cynical, why'd you take such good fruits? I would have given him the coin, the second ring. Or he meant, why didn't you give him even better stuff? And the Rambam paskins in Perek Daled, milchus trumas, halacha gimel, klach etzel yochos, mahani, and it is a shliach, and he's really approving the shlichus, and that's a sugya in Masechta Kiddush. It's also a sugya in Bav Metzia. Fine. Then, if you take a look in Sif Beis, in Siman Samach Gimel, he has a kash on the Rambam. And where do you find this kash? It's in the Tosis Yontif, in the Mishnah on the third parak of Gittin. And the Rambam holds something unbelievable. Let's say, heaven forbid, you ate before you were mafresh truma. Now, obviously, if you ate before you were mafresh truma, you're in violation of the Isur Achilas Tevel, correct? But the Rambam has a radical chiddush, and the Rambam says that l'mafreya, it's as if you were mafresh before you ate the Tevel. And that's based on a principle called matonos shelo hurmu kimi shehurmu dami, which, by the way, belongs to a whole branch of Shas, different kinds of permutations of this principle that, ha'omed for this is ki'u that, if something is omed li batzer, it's kibatzer dami, and so forth and so on. So this truma is omed la'afrasha. And it's ki'hurmu dami, as if he was already merim truma. So the Tosis Yontif is very, very upset about this Rambam. He quotes the Shara Melech. And they all say, what kind of business is this? What do you mean? I can eat Tevel? And then I can be Mafresh Shuma after I ate the Tevel? And I'm Potter? Because of my friend, I'm Frosh Eschal? It's almost like a cynical comment. He says, according to that, you can never get Malkus for Achilles Tevel, because every Achilles Tevel is Asra Sofek, because maybe after the Achila, he'll be Mafresh Truma. So what are you going to tell me? That the Afresh is valid L'mafreya, and he didn't eat Tevel? So what's this all about? How do we understand this Rambam?
Regular business on Shabbos, it sounds like.
Say it again about
Chalos. It's very thing on Shabbos. If you eat on Shabbos, so you can eat and say, I'll be mafresh.
Ah. I don't remember that. I mean, I remember that vaguely, but what I do remember, because we quoted it just a week or two ago, if you happen to remember, was Chalas Chutzlaretz. Yeah. You know, Chalas Chutzlaretz is Ochel V'Holech V'Akach Mafrish. So we wanted to suggest two interpretations of that halacha. Either it means that Chalas Chutzlaretz is not Toveles. You remember we spoke always about the Isra and the negative and the positive and the Kiyuv. So it could be that with regard to Chutzlaretz, they only instituted the positive Chiyuv HaFrosha without the Isra Tevel. Or alternatively, that with regard to Achilas Chala, it works Lamafreya. And the HaFrosha, the Chala, will redeem, so to speak, the Achila that he did, that he implemented before the Hafrash. But now we're talking about Tevel Doraisa in Chalas Eretz Yisrael. How could the Rambam say that the Achila is not a violation of an Isur? Why? Because he's going to be Mafrish and it's Chalam Afreya. How could the Rambam suggest such a thing? Says Reb Chaim Ozer, the Rambam never meant to say that as far as Isur is concerned, you didn't violate the Avera of Tevel when you ate the Tevel. That's impossible. But rather, two dimensions to Hafrashas Truma Maisa. One is the Din Mamon, and one is the Din Isur. He says the following, Hine bevadai le'inyan Isur, le'takin Isur Tevel, le'mafreya, lo shayach, lo ma'ani. There's no such thing as a retroactive undoing of an Isur Achilas Tevel. So what is this halacha that the Rama applies this principle called Matanish Lo Hurmu Kivisha Hurmu Domi? Zelo Shayach Rak Le'inyan Mamon HaShevet Avalo Le'inyan Isur. So it means Kivisha Hurmu Domi, that the Kohen, even though right now all that's in front of him is Tevel, there's no Truma there, the Kohen already has a schus mamon in the truma that's inherent, so to speak, that's mixed into this tevel. And kemisha hurmu domi means that even if the owner of the tvua ate the tevel, he still has the possibility of fulfilling the hafrashas truma b'toras chiyuv mamon, din mamon, even after he eats the tevel, by giving whatever remains of the tvua to the kohen. That's going to work midin matonish lo hurmu kibisha hurmu tomer, and therefore he's paid back the shevet kohenim. All right, the reason why he mentions the shevet kohenim is because there's no specific kohen that he has to give it to in this case. He says kol zman shelo niskadish b'kedushas truma ikar isur tevel gabe. He says certainly until he can generate a kedushas truma on some sort of portion, some section of the tefuah, then there's an Isur Tevel, and that Isur Tevel, once violated, that's irreversible. But shitas haramam hi dematonish lo huma kmo shehuma donu hu rak le'inyan mamon, and as far as mamon is concerned, you can square off with the kohen by fulfilling your chiyuv of matnas kehuna b'toras mamon whenever you decide to deliver the truma to him. Aval inyan isur lo dibetiv layu. It's in its state of tevel, v'leki kedushas maser or kedushas truma. He wasn't mekadesh it, and therefore certainly, if you fast forward a little bit to the next page, Samach Gimel, I underlined it. I don't know if the underline came out in the photocopy about eight lines down. L'shahurmu acharkach, when later on he's mafresh, hamrina nigloy bilsam afreya. Shazel Maman Hashemit. No, as far as Maman Hashemit is concerned, we can apply the principle of Lemafreya. What does that mean? Because the Shemit already has Chusei Maman in potential. Why? Because what is Chulin? I'm sorry. What is Tevel? Tevel is Chulin and Truma somehow mixed in together. And therefore the Truma is inherent in this mixture. Again, I can't point to any particular, you know, Gargir or Shibolis and say, well, that has Kedushas Truma to it. For sure, I can't do that until he's Mafrish. But I know that the Kohanim have monetary rights in something here. Again, without getting into Breira, Sam, I know that's going to bother us.
Getting into it.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I can't get into Breira now. I'll tell you why, because
I'm not asking for
this. Yeah, all I'm interested here. That's the trouble with my shiur at 9 o'clock every day. Now it's 10 o'clock, whatever. Is that I can't, you know, and Alan in particular doesn't tolerate this. That's my ongoing fight with Alan. I can't always answer all of Alan's questions because he wants me to be holding in 10 sugyas, and even with the steroids, I'm not holding in 10 sugyas. I like the idea of steroids, but my idea here is to, you know, throw the ball in your court if you want to really answer all the nuances, and they're all valid questions. The kashov, I never wanted to be misunderstood that I'm discrediting the questions, but I'm always just trying to give you a sugya that captures the essence or the structure of that hakira. You know, is it a din mamon? Is it a din iser? Is it both? And what rules determine both? So again, you have to get into bravery here. There's no question about it. But suffice it to say that if you have mamon, but it's somewhere mixed in, your rights are concentrated, diffused, and now they're diffused amongst this whole thing. It could be that right now I'm holding on to your mamon, but you can't claim that mamon because I haven't specified which mamon it is. For that we need Kedushas Truma through Afrasha. But when Afrasha takes place, I can say Iglai Milsum Afreya, if Yesh Brera, and say that this was your mamon from the get-go, and that's called Matanah Shel Hurmu K'mishu Hurmu Dami. But never did the Rambam have in mind that therefore when he ate the tevel, he didn't violate the Tevel because Mafreya, the Afrasha's Chal, to remove the Tevel. Now, the last thing I want to do today, well, maybe we still have time to do two things today, you'll tell me when you have to go, is I finally found this Otzer Mefarshei Talmud, which, don't be fooled, it looks blue, but it's really green, because I had it rebound. We used to call it the Green Monster. I don't know if you in your yeshivas they called it the Green Monster. Oh. So we used to call it the Green Monster because the Rosh Yeshiva didn't want to allow us to use this. You know,
it took away their half their shear.
Right, and now that, it's even more destructive. It's not only destructive to the Rosh Yeshiva, but the Rosh Yeshiva honestly felt that it was destructive to the Talmid. Why? Because what you get here is a summary that's not even a summary. You know, if it whets your appetite and you go back to the original Nicha, that's fine. But that's not what Talmidim did. They just got very lazy. So in any event, here he has a piece from Rav Moshe Feinstein, from Dibros Moshe. And yesterday you looked it up, Yechiel, but it was pages and pages and pages. Here it's two lines, you know, because he just gives you the Tamsit, you know what I mean? So now this piece from the Dibros Moshe that's being referenced here in the Bamitzia Daf Chafei Amid Beis is based on a Tosfos Divrei HaMashkel V'Im. So if we happen to have a Gemara Bamitzia around, and if not after we finish, we'll open up to that Tosfos Divrei HaMashkel V'Im. And here in the Otzer Mefarshei HaTalmud is footnote number 101. And keep in mind that these numbers change on every page. So it doesn't really help you when I tell you 101 unless I tell you it's Chafei Amid Beis. So it's Chafei Amid Beis.
Is there a page in the book about
this? The page in the book is Kuf Mem Beis, if that allows you to.
I'm not going to necessarily find the book. If I had the book and the page, I'm in the Dibros Moshe.
Yeah, but he doesn't tell you where. I don't think he tells you what page it is in I don't know, maybe we'll see. No, he just writes Dibros Moshe Simon Chavdal.
Oh, that's good.
Simon Chavdal. But that I think I told you yesterday. I think so, right? I meant to, anyway.
What
that? Chav Hei Amid Beis. Dibra Maskil V'im. So he says the following. What we're talking about, Rabosai, is what's called Safek Hinuach in Eilu Metzius. What is Safek Hinuach? You don't know if he left it there deliberately and he's coming back to pick it up, or he lost it. It fell from his pocket and he doesn't know where it is. So this is a complicated sugya because on the one hand you have a mitzvah Shavas Aveda, but on the other hand there's no Ashavas Aveda on a Dover Shemunach Midaito because, Adarab, if you take it, it's almost like causing him the loss of the object. He's going to come back, look for it, and he won't find it. So there might be a difference between two types of an Aveda. One is an Aveda Sheyesh Bas Simon and an Aveda Sheyein Bas Simon. If it's an Ein Bas Simon situation, then it could be that there is a mitzvah Shavas Aveda. What you are doing is you are diminishing the statistical probability that the object will be taken by some uncouth person who's not interested in looking for you, looking for the owner, because it has no siman, meaning, or even if he's not uncouth, if he takes it and he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavah, he won't be able to do so because there's no siman. So that's just to give you a little bit of a flavor for the sugya. Anyway, do you find the Tosfos?
Yes.
How long of a Tosfos is it? Is it gigantic?
It's a half a page.
It's a half a page. All right, so I wish I could tell you, which lines in Tosfos. Do you see anything in Tosfos that says V'yesh lefaresh demairi? Is there such a line in that gigantic Tosfos? You need like a word search for it.
You got it, okay. Yes.
You have it?
Yes. One-third.
So see if you could read it again, not the whole thing, but just part of it. Oh, Sofik Aveda. Okay, Rabosai. That's very important. Sofik Aveda. Meaning you don't know if he lost it or he placed it there deliberately. Right, because in other words. Yeah, but it means if it's not really protected from who knows what, then it's going to be lost. So, in a certain sense, one could logically argue that we should advocate taking it because somehow maybe we'll be able to return it, whereas if we leave it there, it's like gone, if you know what I mean.
It says, if somebody takes it, you don't give it back because now it's not there.
Oh, so one second. So now we have halacha that if he takes it, he should not return it. Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, so you know what I think he's saying? We'll see the difference motion in a minute, but I think what he's saying, Tosfos, is that if he grabs it, which maybe he shouldn't have done, but he can't put it down, because the very moment he takes it, it becomes an aveda. Why does it become an aveda? Because the bialim, even if they put it there deliberately, now they have no clue as to where it is. So he sort of artificially made it into an aveda.
It's a question. The first day I met you, I asked you, I just found the cell phone protector. And you said you should have left it there. You should have picked it up.
So Tosfos is saying, once you picked it up, you actually made it into an aveda. Now the law of an aveda is that you're not allowed to return it to the place where you found it, especially if it's an Eino Mishtamer place. And on the other hand, you're chayv in Hashavah, but how are you going to find the owner? So it's a very kind of sticky situation here. So what does he say? So he says, there should be a line there, hopefully, that says, Hecha digbia havi mechuyiv bishmir misafek. You have such a line?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let me now read to you what the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud has in the name of Rav Moshe.
I found the Rav Simcha Talmud.
Okay, good.
Doesn't say what anaf is, does he?
That far I don't have. So I don't know if you want to... Okay. So let me just read to this and maybe, Yechiel, you can find... Maybe you'll be able to find this. Yeah, Rav Moshe, are you with me? I need your help here. Okay.
Some words.
What?
Okay. You have some keywords you can find.
Yeah, so again, I'm not sure, I'm not sure the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud is a word for word verbatim quote, but I'm sure 90% of what he says are the words of the Divrei Moshe. He says the following: Ubebir Ikar Svaras Hatosfos, Shelechatchila Lo Yitol, he shouldn't have taken it. Afal Pisha Yeshkan Safek Aveda. Again, he doesn't know whether the fellow deliberately placed it there and he's coming back, or he lost it, he forgot it there. So in such a case, better to do, I guess you'd call it Shevi Al Taseh, don't do anything. Because again, by taking it, you might be causing the guy a loss. So you won't be able to find it, and he doesn't have a siman on it, you'll never be able to return it to him. Right? Yeah, so far okay? Oh. But v'im natal lo yachzil l'mkomo. If he already picked it up, he should not put it back down in its place where he found it. Shekvar nischayev bishmirasa. Now he introduces another element into the equation, and that's called shmira. Shmira means that a person who's chayiv in Hashava has to guard it, he has to watch it. If it's an animal, he has to feed it. If it's a talis, he has to air it out. He says, the bistama veda shalifnei anetila. He says, up until the point, but not, ad v'lod b'chlachal, up until the point where he takes it into his hands, meaning the finder picks it up, yesh al hamotzi rak mitzvah sashov. Up until the point that he takes it into his hand, there's only a chiv mitzvah. There's no chiv shmira. Right? This is what we call osuchal es alim, and possibly even a hashiv teshivet. Veshiv es aved. Umachmas ha mitzvah, hayachayav binitilasa, the mitzvah itself obligates him to pick it up, and therefore he has to watch it and return it. Aval ein alav chiyuv mamoni. I have no doubt that Reb Feinstein here is quoting Reb Chaim, that there's still no chiyuv mamon here because he hasn't lifted up the object. The sover atosus, the benidon didan, sheyesh chashash kilkul. He might make it worse for the owner. Al yidei netilaso, ein lechayuv binetilaso. And if it's ein l'chayv binetilasa, then he's not a shomer, because he only becomes a shomer when he picks it up. She'ein chayovin b'sofek mitzvah asei. Oh, this is interesting. You might say, well, let's activate the principle of sofek l'chumra. He has a sofek mitzvah asei. But b'makom chashash averas isur, you might be causing him a loss, and that's an avera. So in such a case, in a sofek mitzvah asei that might lead to an avera, then the principle is going to be shevi al taseh. Don't get involved in a mitzvah asei that also drags along with it a sofek avera. Oh. All that is until the point that he picks it up. Avol yachar netila. Now we're in a whole different situation. Why? Chalal of chiv mamon. It's no longer a question of mitzvah, but a chiv mamon. V'havile kechol shomer. He has the same status as any shomer because he's now holding on to an aveda. He b'mo yadov. He made it into an aveda. Lachen, since he's chayiv in shmira, ena yochel ashiva l'makom sheinu mishtamer. And basically, I think what's going to happen here, if I remember correctly, don't hold me responsible for this, that basically Yehavi Yodo Ad Sheyom Eliyahu HaNavi. I mean, there's nothing he can do with it. In fact, I think my wife and I are still holding on to a pair of sandals that we picked up 30 years ago, literally. And we try to, it's a problem, but we try to keep it in deep freeze because what are you going to do with it? We have no way of returning it, but on the other hand, we have a chiyuv of Hashav.
Is there going to be Yerusha?
I don't think so. I think I don't think mitzvahs are given by Yerusha. The only mitzvah that's given by Yerusha is a chiyuv mama, meaning if I'm holding on to your mama and then I die, then my children have to give back your mama to you. But as far as mitzvahs is concerned, I don't think mitzvahs are given.
But once you pick up the sandals, becomes a chiyuv mama.
I didn't understand what you meant. I thought you were asking me about the mitzvah hashom. In terms of a chiyuv shmira, yeah, for sure. Anything that I'm holding on to as a shomer is my children will have to, continue that shmira ad infinitum. So Rav Moshe, why am I excited about this Rav Moshe Feinstein? I'll tell you the honest truth. I was always under the impression that Rav Moshe's Lomdus was a sort of on a different wavelength. I have sometimes trouble understanding Rav Moshe. Usually when I understand Rav Moshe, I come out with a svara that's a little bit more balabatish, if you know what I mean. And I'm very happy with that, because if he's right, he's right. I don't care whether it's balabatish or not. But as a general rule, and how long, Yechiel, have we been going now for this 9 o'clock shit? It's about a half a year, Am I exaggerating?
At least
a half a year. I don't think I ever quoted Rav Moshe Feinstein, did I?
No.
Because it's a different approach. But here, I'm not sure, but I would bet my bottom dollar that he knew this Reb Chaim that we learned in the stencil, that there's a fundamental difference in Aveda before you pick it up and after you pick it up. Before you pick it up, it's only mitzvahs. After you pick it up, already takes on a different category. It becomes a chiyuv mamon with a chiyuv a chiyuv hashav.
You told me I shouldn't have picked up the telephone because I didn't hear Chaim. I heard a fairly well about the difference between the man and the nisr.
Yeah, I found where we had such a chilukim in the Shabbos Aveda. What you're saying is exactly what he says. Chiyuv mamon shenase Allah v'lashik hashav v'deshomim v'gezel v'chodomim v'zeh svar yatosis to who rakishik v'yav v'yesh mamon chaver v'yado shayach v'yisayet v'chiyuv mamon
al-gufo. Right, the difference was...
Otherwise, just the essay, right.
Yes,
and do you have in front of you, because I forgot to bring it, the Grach stencil that we read together yesterday or 2 days ago? Bamitzia Chafav and Beis. It was a very short paragraph.
No.
Yeah, it's a little bit before the one on Onna, maybe one or two pages before that. That's it. So there he quotes a Rambam, right? He quotes a Rambam and Ran, and they hold that the Surah Asin Yada applies even to the mitzvah Hashava, not just Losucha Lis'al. Anyway, we'll just read this one or two lines. If Yomar Grazza, the choluk chiyuv hashava kodem motel liyodo, maybe achidem motel liyodo. The achidem motel liyodo, kodem yosu liyodo, is yeshach mitzvah saseh, akakaf li gavra. Not sure what this word is. Kimo, I think it should be a chaf.
Kimo
mitzvah saseh shal tefillin. Avak shabos liyodo, yesh lo chiyuv mamon, again, lama nefesh yelah shivu lechavera. Al zel lo mahani yesh. Right, so yesh doesn't apply when you make this transition from a chiyuv mitzvah to a chiyuv hashavas mamon. And I think the Divrei Moshe is really building himself on this sort of time. So the last thing I wanted to do with you today, again, if you have to go, you have to go, is the Torah Zrayim, because the Torah Zrayim has the other Reb Chaim stencil, the Reb Chaim from Peah, which is. Sam, that should be like a few pages before that.
I have to turn this around.
Oh, okay, but I'm saying I want to compare it much to Reb Chaim on Peah, which is from Metzia Daf Tes. So let's just review very quickly what the facts on the ground. If an Ashir picks up Peah on behalf of an Ani, there's a machlokas tanoim. We're going to focus now on Rabbi Eliezer's shita, and Rabbi Eliezer's shita is that the ani could be zochan, the asher could be zochan on behalf of the ani, based on the principle of migudi boy mafkin chase, but only if he is an alien. He's a czar. If he is the balabayas, he's not an inch the alma. Then migu doesn't work. That's what Rashi says in Bava Metzia. And Reb Chaim wants to explain this in the following way, because off air it makes no sense. How can you possibly say that the migu shouldn't work if he's the Baal Bayis? The migu is based on the fact that he can be mafkir his nechasim, and he can be mafkir his own sod as well. So even though there's an iser on the Baal HaSod, he's not allowed to pick up the peah, he has to leave it for the aniyim, but migu just indicates and generates a yad. He has a schus to this payah. How can he have a schus to this payah? The answer is because he can be mafkir as nechasim. And if that mafkir, migu di boy mafkir, works for inish the alma, it should work for the Baal HaSod as well. So that's what Reb Chaim wanted to say, the Tzvei Dinim. That migu di zochi le nafshe, etc., or I'm sorry, migu di mafkir nechasim, that works only as far as dini mamonis is concerned, to give him a yad to the moment, he has a shakas to the moment. But the Isur on the Baal HaBayis is lo salakim. And that becomes Isur. And Reb Chaim wanted to say that if, let's say, a piece of pay would get mixed up in a tarovis, then you could apply the dinim of bittel, but that's only as far as the Isur is concerned, but not as far as the Mammon is concerned. In such a case, there would be no difference, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the way Rashi understands it, between the Baal HaSod and anyone else. Because the whole difference is because of the nature of that Isur, but that Isur is gone with the tarovis. So if you take a look at the Torah's Rhyme on the left column on page Yuches, Vera'isi, do you see such a paragraph?
Yes.
Vera'isi b'Knesses Yisrael Choveres Beis, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, was published in Slabodka, Shenitpas Shom Tiritz Al Zem Moron Hagrach Sal Mibrisk Vzel Shono Vzel Toref Dvorim Demiudi Boy Mafkil in a Chose Lo Mahani El Bemoman Avalo Be Isser Valkane Odomi Alma Sheinbo El Din Gezel Anim. Right, because he's an usher, he's not an ani. He's Amrinan Bey, Migu di boy mafkin chase. He has a shaykhus to it. Through the Migu, he has a yad for zchia in pay. Avol bebala soda dil bilvad hadin gezel, which means mamon, yesh odin iser, as an iser unto itself in the mice of taking the payah. Is mashav v'aval ha'esei dili oni uli ulager tazov osam v'lav delosalake. All right, he has both an essay and a losa. Al kain, therefore, with regard to the balasada, lo mahani bo migu di boy mafkin chase. Avol bishibol shel leket shenis arva begodish hara isin shebo batul berov. Ella that din moman laniim lo batul minev al kain mahani bo zem migu di boy mafka afilu be balasada kmo biyondom bealma ad kan torf tvorov. So what I wanted to do with you, but I think we're running out of time, and I have to put in a little time in Nida for today's shiur, is I wanted to, after the Torah Zeroyim quotes this Reb Chaim, he tries to defend the other Rishonim who disagree with Rashi, and certainly the Rashbi Shantz who disagrees with Rashi, because the Rashbi Shantz thought in his commentary on the Yerushalmi that Mishnah of a Shibboleth Peah that got mixed up in a Tarovus is certainly a riot against Rashi. So the Rashbi Shantz came to the conclusion that according to Rabbi Eliezer, even in a case where the Bala Soda picks up the Peah on behalf of another Ani, it's valid, it's viable. Why? Because there's a Migu. So the Migu operates even for the Bala Soda. So the Torah Zeroyim wants to give a whole Hezber why that's so. And I think it's a beautiful chiddush, very similar to what we've been doing until now, in the paragraph Divra Maskel Ve'ilule, which is the bottom paragraph here. And at the same time, we might want to enjoy the benefit of the first part of this presentation, where he has also a chiddush. And we'll leave that, believe neither, for another time. I just want to make sure before we leave that you have the following pages. You have the Rav Baruch Ber, the various pieces.
Yes.
So that will be another we'll try to do tomorrow at 9. And last but not least, I gave out these pages. I just want to make sure you have them, because we never really finished this up. This is Rav Aaron Kahn's notes on Chesk Sabbatim. I think I gave this to you, pages 273 and 287. Well, when we started this Din Mammon and Din Iser business. Do you have that? Because I want to... I
looked at it. Here it is.
Here
it is.
Oh, so give this to you.
I have 287, and I probably have
273.
But you can make a picture.
And what I realized is that what we did when we looked at this is the first paragraph on page 273, Besov. And now I think what's even more exciting is the second paragraph, Betosis Diramasil Mipnei.
Okay.
And then we'll try to hop over to page 287. So I wish you a great day, and Grace Yeshka.
Thank you.
Thank you.